to know that people who serve here have the same ideology or they have the same values really matters.
Protest hit the heart of Hong Kong, its businesses. This is Wednesday, October 23rd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead for you, an elaborate ceremony in Tokyo for Japan's emperor. Fewer autos produced lead to problems for many in India. And Hong Kong's problems lead to new business for another major Asian metropolis. All on today's VOA Asia. Anti-government protests in Hong Kong have taken on an economic angle, with followers of the movement designating businesses by their loyalties and giving them color codes. For instance, yellow, a color that in Chinese culture traditionally symbolizes royalty and courage, when was also the color of the 2014 pro-democracy umbrella movement designates a supportive business. Protesters are encouraged to avoid and have in fact vandalized businesses painted with the less popular blue color. VOA's Anita Powell visited one such yellow business and has this report.
Hong Kong is known for its dazzling array of shopping opportunities, a fact that draws tourists from around the world. But the last 4 months have taken a toll on the city's famous consumer culture. Hong Kong's Tourism Bureau recently announced that this past August saw the worst drop in tourism in more than a decade. 20 consecutive weekends of demonstrations have forced many shops along the protest routes to close early amid heavy police presence, tear gas, and water cannon. And protesters in this leaderless movement have seized on a quieter tactic, disrupting the city's many malls and encouraging boycotts of businesses that support what they see as Beijing's tightening grip on this city. So politically minded Hong Kongers are fighting with their wallets. Social media users have created a database of more than 100 protester-supporting shops, so-called yellow businesses, and of allegedly Beijing-friendly shops, dubbed blue businesses. Some of those China-friendly businesses have been recently vandalized by protesters. On one of the city's main protest thoroughfares, Ian Chan runs a shoebox-sized craft beer shop called Angry Beer. He says he made it on the yellow list by showing support for protesters on Facebook. He's angry, but not about the toll the protests have taken on business, forcing him to shutter early on weekends.
I still support them.
Why is that?
Because the big problem is the government and the chief executive.
Customers like tutor and musician Stephen Lai say it matters that their money follows their politics. He's been out on the streets protesting on the weekends, but he stopped by recently for a weekday afternoon brew. He's been a patron for the last 4 months.
I think besides the quality of whether it's beer or food or any products that people serve, what customers really care about is the idea behind it or what the people stand for. So to know that people who serve here have the same ideology or they have the same values really matters.
Andy says he's enjoying the chance to taste local brews. Chan's shop features craft beers from around the world, with one notable exception. There are no Chinese brews here. Initially, he said that was because of a supplier issue, but now he's sticking with it. Lai stresses the shop has also earned his loyalty because of its products.
When you drink a Hong Kong beer, even the packing or the packaging or the marketing or the visual design of the Hong Kong beer just simply intrigues you to, oh, that language there, it's a wordplay from a swear word of the Cantonese, or oh, that's a story or that's a character that I recognize. So that's always fun to try out.
Come the weekend, he says he'll be back on the streets agitating for the famous five demands that underpin this movement and include universal suffrage, amnesties for protesters, an inquiry into violence, and more. The city's government is not budging, so protesters say they won't quit. But during the work week, he says, his dollars are making those demands for him. Anita Powell, VOA News, Hong Kong.
This is your invitation to read more on our top story by following us on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. A senior U.S. diplomat told lawmakers Tuesday the administration of U.S. President Donald Trump remains concerned about India's clampdown on the part of Kashmir it controls, but supports India's development goals in the region. Officials in northern Afghanistan say Taliban insurgents have stormed a security outpost in Kunduz province, killing at least 17 policemen and injuring several others. The former Malaysian Prime Minister Najib Razak returned to court on Tuesday as prosecutors, defense lawyers, presented their closing arguments in his corruption trial over a multi-billion dollar scandal at State Fund 1MDB. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia. We continue now. Japan's new emperor, Naruhito, formally ascended to the throne Tuesday in an elaborate ceremony in Tokyo. Naruhito read out a proclamation at the Imperial Palace promising to fulfill his responsibility as the symbol of the state and of the unity of the people. His brief event ended with Prime Minister Shinzo Abe congratulating the new emperor and leading the crowd with three shouts of banzai, which means 10,000 years of long life. More than 100 foreign dignitaries were in attendance, including Britain's Prince Charles. U.S. President Donald Trump congratulated the people of Japan on the occasion of the enthronement of the new emperor and empress, and added in a statement that the occasion comes at a time in which the bonds of friendship between the American and Japanese people have never been stronger. Naruhito officially began his reign on the chrysanthemum throne in May when his 85-year-old father, Emperor Emeritus Akihito, officially abdicated after 4 decades, citing family health. Akihito, who succeeded his father, World War II-era Emperor Hirohito, was the first Japanese emperor to abdicate the throne in 200 years. Emperor Naruhito's ascension comes in the wake of Typhoon Hagibis over a week ago, a massive storm that left 80 people dead. A parade where Naruhito meets the public was delayed until November 10th out of respect for the victims of the storm. Abe's government chose the name Reiwa for Emperor Naruhito's reign, which the Prime Minister explained as culture created by and nurtured by people who beautifully care about each other. VOA Steve Miller got in touch with reporter Jason Gatewood in Tokyo about the ceremony and the impact it has on Japan.
Jason, I wanted to get some further clarification. Today is the enthronement ceremony, but he became the emperor back in May. So can you explain really briefly what is the significance of the ceremony that was conducted today versus the one some 5 months ago?
Well, today's ceremony, which is called Sokui no Rei in Japanese, it's the official kind of coming out ceremony. Basically, the ceremony that he had earlier in May, you have to remember that normally when these proceedings take place, it's immediately after the preceding emperor passes away.
I'm interested, you know, what kind of impact does now that this ceremony has taken place, what kind of impact will that have on Japan since he's already been the emperor?
Well, he's already been an emperor, but you have to also remember that the last time these affairs took place was back in 1989, and a good chunk of the population wasn't even alive yet. So, and another part of it can kind of barely remember it happening. So what it does is kind of really officially, like, reminds everyone, hey, you know, that we have a new emperor, the Reiwa Emperor has been installed.
Well, another aspect of the emperor is, of course, the holiday surrounding the emperor's birthday. And now that you have a new emperor, you have a new emperor birthday holiday. But I'm curious as to what happens to the birthday celebration for his father, which was also a holiday until he abdicated.
Right. Okay, so, like, there's a whole history behind that. December 23rd was the preceding emperor's birthday, and, of course, usually every emperor's birthday is a holiday, a national holiday. This coming December 23rd will not be a holiday. However, the new emperor's birthday, which is February 23rd, hasn't officially been made a holiday yet. On the national calendar, most people are expecting something to happen there. But another anecdote to it is what happens to September 23rd, right? So in the past, the Showa Emperor, which he reigned from the 1930s all the way up until 1989, they made his holiday into Midori Day, which is Green Day. It celebrates forestry and greenery and stuff like that. But then in 2007, they gave it back to him and moved Midori no Hi. They moved Greenery Day to May 4th in order to elongate a period of national holidays that we call Golden Week here, to basically give people a longer period of time to be with their families.
Jason yes. Gatewood is in Japan. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Happening now in Asia, a fresh round of intra-Afghan peace talks will be held in China next week. That according to Taliban spokesman Suhail Shaheen. He raises hopes for renewed negotiations, even as violence surges in Afghanistan's 18-year war. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. India's rural areas are feeling the pinch as that country's once booming automobile sector struggles with its worst downturn in two decades, and an estimated 350,000 workers employed in auto plants and ancillary industries losing their jobs. Anjana Prasricha visited a village near the booming business and auto hub of Gurugram district in Haryana state to find out why plummeting automobile sales are affecting rural areas whose fortunes rose along with the auto industry.
4 years ago, Gopal Singh built a four-story house and opened a shop with the money he earned from the 22 rooms he rented to migrant workers in Kasan village. As India's auto sector boomed, labor from poorer states had flooded his village that lies adjacent to an auto plant of the country's biggest car maker.
In every building here, 5 or 10 rooms are vacant. Before, rooms were always booked and tenants lined up to find accommodation. Now there are rooms and no tenants.
As factories lay off workers due to plummeting auto sales, thousands of workers are leaving the village, like Dinesh Kumar Singh, who lived in Kasan for 10 years. 3 months back, he lost his job in a company that transported cars.
I am not finding any job here. I am paying rent from my savings. Now I have to return to my village. What will I do here without work?
It is a setback for the once sleepy hamlet that transformed as it raced to cater to the huge flow of migrant workers. Farmers turned into landlords and shop owners. With newfound affluence, motorcycles and cars jostled with goats in its narrow lanes. Village homes became more aspirational. But as workers leave, there are far fewer customers for shoes, groceries and other goods.
If I compare my sales to 3 years ago, they are down to about half. I have lost about 55%.
55% loss.
And villagers have to tighten belts once again.
My monthly income has come down, so I have to reduce my expenses.
Until recently, Kasan was a symbol of how a rising economy was bringing change to India's countryside. But as its fortunes reverse along with the auto sector, the only question in these lanes is, when will the workers return? Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, Kasan, Haryana.
Stay with us. Coming up, some Ozark folk music from Missouri. This is VOA Asia.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news from VOA Asia, China's Great Firewall system of online censorship blocks domestic access to nearly a quarter of the foreign news organizations accredited to report in that country. That according to a press watchdog on Tuesday. Beijing bars its citizens from accessing the publicly available websites of 23% of 215 international news organizations that have journalists based in China. This is Business Scene. I'm Ira Melman. From luxury Singapore apartments to Malaysian seafront condos, Hong Kong investors are shifting cash into Southeast Asian properties. Property stocks in Hong Kong, one of the world's most expensive housing markets, have plummeted since June. Now mainland Chinese, who traditionally viewed properties in Hong Kong as a safe investment, are opting for rival financial hub Singapore as a result of the increasingly violent protest and the U.S.-China trade war, according to observers.
I think the recent protest has so-called triggered up intense interest in Singapore. And what is Singapore insofar as the Hong Kong segment of buyers or potential buyers goes?
There are further signs the stable, tightly ruled city is benefiting from the Hong Kong turmoil. Goldman Sachs last week estimated as much as $4 billion flowed out of Hong Kong to Singapore this summer. And analysts warned there was little hope of Hong Kong's property market recovering soon.
So this protest actually stirred up, you know, subgroups within Hong Kong itself. You have the high net worth Chinese nationals doing business there. They are transferring businesses here, or transferring the wealth here. Then we have Westerners based in Hong Kong also wanting to come to Singapore to transfer their business over.
Natural disasters can leave homes in ruins and livelihoods destroyed. But now a prototype being developed in northern Queensland of Australia hopes to change that. Tiny homes built to stand up to cyclones are becoming an increasingly popular option as housing prices continue to bite. No bigger than a shipping container, it's fitted with all home comforts, shower, sink, even a self-composting toilet. Its creators claim the structure is built to withstand cyclones. This house has also been designed to be energy efficient and offer good quality interior air. Testing simulations in full scale, James Cook University is currently researching different types of tie-down mechanisms to determine which one works best under cyclonic conditions. The tiny home concept has taken off in different forms across the globe, but regulating their rollout is posing challenges.
So the idea of having the tiny house available for people to consider as an option is something that council will look at as part of the normal building codes.
The project has taken 5 years with a price tag of between $33,000 and $67,000. Those involved hope it could also be a solution to the affordable housing crisis or to provide temporary accommodation in the event of natural disasters. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Ira Melman. A news break now from VOA Asia. The final of the AFC Cup has been moved from Pyongyang to Shanghai, according to Asia's football body, a week after North and South Korea played out a surreal World Cup qualifier in an empty stadium. The Football Confederation said it had been compelled to move the match to a neutral venue after considering logistical hurdles, including the broadcast of the match. Now on VOA Asia, the Paris Zoo is welcoming a new occupant, the blob. This bright yellow, unicellular, brainless organism exists all over the world and can move, eat, and even solve problems. It's the first time in the world that it's been presented to the public. VOA's Jim Randall has our story.
The blob is part of the myxomycetes family, a class of slime molds. A blob is neither an animal nor a fungus, but has characteristics of both.
A blob is really one of the most extraordinary things living on Earth, but he's been here for millions of years, and we still don't really know what it is. We don't really know if it's an animal, if it's a fungus, if it's in between.
It lives and grows in damp forest undergrowth away from light. Research shows the yellow mold-like slime can heal itself in 2 minutes if it's cut in half. It moves without any limbs. The blob doesn't have a brain, yet it can solve problems and transmit what it learns.
The blob will learn how to get past a barrier to get its food, and it gets faster with practice. If we fuse two blobs together, the one which learned will transmit its knowledge to the other.
While much about the blob is a mystery, researchers have found it seems to thrive on breakfast cereal. Though it has no mouth, no stomach, and no eyes, the blob can still detect and eat its food. Many of these biological oddities exist in the wild, with different characteristics in different continents, but this is the first in the world to go on display in captivity. Jim Randall, VOA News.
The rural Ozark region of the United States prides itself on its musical traditions. We accompany Alvy Dooms and his wife, Debbie, to a Monday night jam session to get an intimate glimpse into a slice of Ozark culture. Gabrielle Weiss, reporter for VOA, takes us on an audio tour from McClurg, Missouri.
My name's Alvy Dooms. In a few days, I'll be 89 years old. And this is my wife over here on the end, Dovey Dooms. Very fine lady.
That's enough.
Takes good care of me. I'm doing pretty good for my age, I think. So I play rhythm guitar mainly, but I can play about any kind of an instrument to a certain extent. Hey, you going to McClurg tonight? Oh, okay. Okay, then. See you in a little bit. This is Monday. We're going to have a jam session. It's old-time music. About the only place left that you'll hear it is in southwest Missouri and northwest Arkansas. It's a little different music what they hear. You just don't hear this anymore. Different world, this part of Ozark. From my house to McClurg, it's 52.3 miles round trip. And we're pretty much right in the heart of the Ozarks now.
We're new people.
How are you?
I've been coming about 25 years. My son plays fiddle, so that's the main reason we started coming.
Best thing to do on Monday night.
Musicians, fill your plates.
You don't find this blend of traditional music and traditional people. You know, and their food, yeah. It's very traditional here.
Gordon, I'm going to do Going Across the Sea.
You know, there are a lot of places that strive to keep history and tradition alive. But this, it isn't that. It's not just trying to keep something alive. It's just trying to keep something that's part of your life, part of life.
I'm about wore out. My old shoulder's about to quit me.
Last call for coffee!
My arms are hurting now.
I've been playing here with these same musicians for like 20, 25 years, and it's really kind of like a family. I learned to play the fiddle sitting next to people who aren't here anymore, who were the masters.
Good night, Alvy. You take
care.
Good
night, Steve. You got to be careful now.
We will.
It also gives me a sort of a sense of who I am as somebody who's from the Ozark and whose family is from the Ozarks for generations. And it just feels like it's supposed to be.
I hope you enjoyed that. You can listen to it again and watch it, as a matter of fact, on Google Connect. You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. Visit our voanews.com program page and see us on YouTube. Follow us on VOA Asia Twitter. Let's hear from you, VOA Asia Facebook, and our email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for being with us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Carl Starling, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and our interns, Hai Young and Afra. I'm Ira Melman. I'm in Washington. Enjoy your day.